With that, I will highlight what the topic is today. It's our updates pertaining to HIPAA for 2023 and really what you need to know, right? There's a lot of headlines out there right now, which a lot of them we're going to look at together. But ultimately, my goal today is to focus in on where our priorities need to lie in line with where the government is focused, where ransomware groups are focused, and how we can leverage HIPAA compliance in all of that, as well as updates to HIPAA that are relevant for you to know now. So with that, let's move on. First off, my name is Ari Van Persum. I am our Director of Business Development here at MedCurity, and ultimately, I get to provide a lot of education around the topic. I consider it a privilege to do so, but ultimately, I work with most of our clients, and I have a lot of conversations around the security concerns within healthcare these days. So I have a really close look into what's happening in the market, just with boots on the ground clients, as well as other groups beyond that. So I'm excited to share a lot of the research that I've been doing the last couple of weeks, and hopefully this is helpful to you. The agenda of how we're going to break this down is we're going to look back at 2022. I've captured some of the themes, the statistics that are interesting, and that's going to ultimately shape what we need to look at for 2023 and focus on. We're also going to look at some recent breaches just because I think it sets the scene nicely and reminds us that this is a prevalent issue, that cybersecurity concerns are not going away anytime soon. And then we're going to end with some regulatory updates and then the future of technology and HIPAA, as well as, like I said, some practical steps forward, because I consider it one of my priorities to make sure that you have something tangible to take away from this beyond some new information around the security elements of HIPAA. So first and foremost, let's look at the reality of healthcare in the US, as well as some themes from the last year. There is a report that was released earlier in 2022 by IBM, but why I always come back and reference it is because of the broad nature of their survey that they did. It was global, so across every industry and every country. So the stats that we grab really do capture where the risks are. But the ones that you see here on the screen have to do with healthcare, naturally. And so not surprisingly, healthcare leads the pack for 12 years straight. We have the highest average cost of breach in healthcare across the globe. That's not just the United States. However, the highest average cost for any kind of breach across all the countries, the United States wins, which is not necessarily an accolade we want, but it's something to consider that we are highly targeted, the United States. Like I said, I have a lot of links throughout here. So once you get the slide deck, feel free to dig into these articles and these surveys more if you want. Specifically in healthcare and statistically, right, there's a lot we can learn from data, is that we had another record year of number of records breached in healthcare. So the magnitude of records that were inappropriately accessed by a bad actor, by an accident, really was just under 50 million. And so what's interesting is the percentage of how or where those breaches came from, right? And unsurprisingly, you're going to see that 78% were classified as hacking or IT incidents. So really the takeaway from this has to do with technology is still one of our biggest assets, but it's also one of our biggest risks that we need to pay really close attention to and be constantly investing in. The other stat on here is really interesting to me, and it's something that we've talked about a lot on our past webinars, but business associates, right? It's one of the ways that we're growing as a healthcare industry, because in order for us to scale what we're doing and optimize our current staff, especially in a world with staffing issues, right? Ultimately, using vendors like business associates, whether that's an IT vendor, a consulting group, revenue cycle management system, you name it, right? We want to leverage what we're doing well. However, 39% of our records last year were breached through business associates. I think that's a pretty staggering stat because of the rate that we're growing towards partnering with these groups. So with that being said, right, it just frames and gives us a lot of context of where we need to focus for security concerns for the following year. I did get all of this data off the portal where all of the breaches are submitted. It's informally known as the OCR Wall of Shame. That's the Office of Civil Rights. And that's where any breach over 500 records is posted publicly. So on that link, you could click it and go see from the last 24 months, every over 500 record breaches and see the nature of who they've affected and the number of records breached. So it's really interesting. And so these stats I just pulled for 2022. The other element that I want to highlight statistically, which I find fascinating, is one thing that we've known is beyond healthcare, the financial sector and the education sector are the other top targeted industries. But what's interesting in a conversation that I don't think is happening enough is the fact that our education sector in the post high school, post K through 12 era, right, is the groups, the university hospital systems that do connect to PHI, right? We have these universities that have attached hospital systems or they have medical centers within their group. So what's interesting about this stat is that the impact of breaches and ransomware attacks from 2021, is up 73% into 2022. That is a staggering statistic because of the slower nature of updating systems in healthcare and education. Bad actors have tapped into that and acknowledged that it's easier to target some of these groups because they can access PHI quicker. Now, while that reality is changing and we are investing in our system, that's a good question. I just got a question, but I'll answer that in a second. Ultimately, we want to just keep our attention on some of these university hospital systems. So if that's your realm, just note that this is a really good practical step webinar to consider because some of the headlines we're going to look at in a moment have to do with what they were penalized on. So moving on, phishing and ransomware remain the highest threats. This probably doesn't consider, or this probably doesn't shock anyone, right? Because we educate a lot on phishing and ransomware. But some stats to really bolster what we're seeing. In 2022, there was a survey done on a group of IT executives. I believe it was about 100. So it is a smaller group, but across the United States. And ultimately they found that 81%, so 81 of those individuals experienced a phishing attack. But what's more interesting is only 1 in 5 actually ran phishing simulation tests. So it's a good reminder for us that this is one of the most prevalent threats right now is phishing attacks, but our training does not match that right now. So it's one of my highest recommendations for what we need to consider to implement in 2023. And access to phishing simulation tools really is more accessible these days and at a price point that makes sense regardless of your size. So it's just something to seriously consider. The same survey that went out is that they found that small to mid-sized hospitals are the highest targeted groups when it comes to ransomware attacks, which is really interesting because a lot of the headlines I'm going to show you happen to be large hospitals. So even though publicly facing, we see information on large groups getting breached, it's interesting to note that 48% of the surveyed individuals experienced downtime in the last year. That's a lot of groups that we're not hearing talked about, right? So it's just to set the scene that this is a prevalent issue right now. And so the conversation is changing around this could happen to anyone. And then lastly, in 2022, there were quite a few settlements that came out around right of access. I've talked about this before on other webinars, so I won't stay on it too long, but ultimately I went through and found how many settlements there were to date, and it's over 40 from 2018 when they started to really enforce this and investigate complaints and $2.6 million in settlements. And that can be ranging from $5,000 settlements up to $300,000. It kind of depends on the nature of the complaint and the breach and the non-compliance that they find. So just keep that in mind. And there are other webinars if you want to hear more about right of access that dig into it. So looking at some recent headlines also to inform what's happening right now, and what has been happening in 2022, now bleeding into this year, is right at the top, you can see Oklahoma State University. This is why I touched on university health system area and how it's highly targeted, is because we saw a recent settlement. This wasn't a recent breach, but the Office of Civil Rights recently just settled on $875,000 penalty with this university because of a breach that occurred a couple years ago. So just something to just keep in mind, even though it was a bad actor that came into their network, installed malware, and essentially breached quite a few records over a couple months. Common Spirit is another one, which I'm sure a lot of you have seen this in the headlines, because they are one of the largest nonprofit hospitals in the United States. They span across six different states, I believe, but ultimately there were quite a few smaller scale stories of people being impacted on being able to get care, whether they were needing an ambulance, being prescribed pain medication. There were issues that happened because of this ransomware attack. So this one specifically highlights that this isn't just a security risk. This is a patient health risk now, which has been a conversation for a while, but now we're getting first account stories around this. So the severity of this conversation just continues to increase. And then lastly, on large hospitals, right, Maryland, if you look at the date stamp, this was this month in February. They just reported a ransomware attack on their group, and they experienced some downtime with some of their systems as well. So it's happening left and right. And then there was a medical group in California recently that there was a breach of quite a bit patient information to quite a few patients. But then lastly, this was the most recent settlement announced from the Office of Civil Rights, Banner Health, located in Arizona or headquartered in Arizona, is something to note that they had a cybersecurity breach a couple years ago that they just finished the investigation on. So even these headlines that we're seeing the last couple months, we're going to see more headlines about it and what the settlement looks like in the next couple, maybe years, just because that's how long investigations take around these items. So with all of that understood, right, let's look at trends to consider in 2023, which is probably the more important piece of this webinar, right, is understanding how does that inform what we need to do this year? Where are all the risks? So I want to keep it as pretty straightforward as I can, right? Because we could get into the weeds on some different ways to address them. And if you do have questions on that, feel free to reach out to our team separately. Happy to chat about it. But broadly speaking, we need to continue to invest in our IT, right? This is becoming more, there's a lot more awareness around this these days. But because 92% of our breaches happen to be electronic, right? Still 8% could be paper related, but because of that electronic aspect of this, we really want to pay attention to how we're investing in our information systems, in our staff, as well as true following of those processes that are established in our policies. So 59% of those are network breaches, 23% are email breaches, right? So it really could happen in a multitude of ways, and we want to ultimately train our employees and invest in our network and who's supporting it the best we can. Vendor risk management, right? So we talked about business associates a little bit earlier, but this really is an area that I want to make a top priority, right, is looking at how our vendors introduce third-party risk to our systems as well as to our PHI. So why this is so critical, not only because of the number of breaches that came from them last year, but is also just wanting to heighten and elevate our security programs and ultimately how we're complying with HIPAA, right? So there was an amendment to the security rule called the High Tech Act back in 2013. Many of you probably are very aware of it, but ultimately what it did is it pushed HIPAA compliance requirements on to business associates. So now they are required to do these same activities like a security risk analysis, have policies train their employees, just like you are as a covered entity. So since that's a newer in the government world, right, that's 10 years ago, which is still new relatively, and they're learning to enforce it better, we're seeing that business associates are slowly adopting to complying with it. So knowing that that's the case, and as covered entities, we have been complying with this much longer, it's within your right to go to your business associates, your IT vendors, your cloud hosting vendors, your EHR. EHRs are typically pretty good about this, but making sure that you have documentation that they are complying with HIPAA in the ways that they're required to. So it could be as simple as a checklist that you hand them and they have to sign off on them completing an SRA, training their employees, reviewing their policies, right? All the elements that are the basic HIPAA standards, and having them sign off on it, right? So that if there is a breach pertaining to non-compliance on the business associate side, you've done your due diligence to make sure that they have documented that they say they're going to do what they need to do to protect the PHI you're sharing. And that also loops in your business associate agreements. I talk about this one a lot because of the fact we most of the time are just rushing to get this signed and in place, right? Check that box for HIPAA, which is very important to get this in place. But now we're at a point where we need to really be looking at the terms of those agreements, right? So sometimes we have our lawyers look at them. Other times the practice managers are, operating directors are, really, it really depends on who's involved, clinical informatics, you name it. But looking at the terms of what their responsibility is if there's a breach, what the timeline is of notification to you, the financial burden, the reporting burden to the Office of Civil Rights, right? These are all details that absolutely affect you. So make sure that you do agree to what's happening in your agreements with your BAAs. That's definitely something to consider this year. Along with that, not only are we making sure that the HIPAA compliance aspects, the security risk evaluations are happening with our vendors, we need to make sure that we're following them internally also. So internal audits are also something we need to consider elevating in 2023. For the most part, this is something that most groups do every year, but what needs to continue to happen is improving on these processes. So we look at the increase of right of access settlements, right? This is essentially one patient complaining for not formally complaining to the Office of Civil Rights of not getting their medical records within a timely manner. This opens the door for investigation from the Office of Civil Rights to your practice. And it'll start by them asking for a policy around right of access to their medical records, right? But depending on what you provide, if it's not deemed sufficient, then it opens the door for them to request other policies, your security risk analysis, right? And that's not a position you want to be in. So why I mentioned that is, have you trained your employees on the right of access policy that you have? Are employees confident on what the timeline is? Do you have a sufficient process in place? Has it been tested? Is there sufficient documentation around it, right? And that's just one piece. This could be an example across your organization on how we're elevating what we're already doing and making sure it's solid. We have the documentation and that we are following through on what our policies state. I will say, if your policy maybe is a bit more robust than it needs to be, you have within your right to revise it and make it more reasonable. Because if your policy states that you're going to test your contingency plan every quarter, and that is just not reasonable for your organization size or your staff, not meeting what your policy says is worse than changing that your policy to state you're going to do it once a year or twice a year, right? So the point is establishing a process and making sure you're following it. All things I'm sure you all know, but I'm just here to remind you that they are critical, because we will look at some why these groups were penalized and what was found insufficient in their organization, and they're all going to come back to HIPAA compliance requirements. the next bullet, I was just talking about this with a client earlier today about how important it is to be testing and looking at disaster recovery plans. Ultimately, this is something that can get really granular, really detailed, but ultimately, it's so critical because of all the stats we're looking at, right? If 81% of us are affected by ransomware attacks and phishing emails, then we need to be ready for when it happens to us, because it's not a matter of if. The conversation around this has changed to when this is going to happen to you, which I don't share as a fear, uncertainty, or doubt tactic, right? This is just the reality. And so what can we do to prepare ourselves better? That's having an accurate disaster recovery plan, a contingency plan, emergency management plan, whatever you call it, and then subsequently testing it. Does it actually make sense to run through it? Every party involved, do they know what their role is? And then making sure that beyond the tabletop exercise, running through it in a room, do a full-blown test. Test your backups, because if your backups don't actually come through when you do have downtime or a breach, it is not a position you want to be in. So if you have the controls in place, test them. That one I could talk about on its own for an entire webinar, so, but I'm going to move on because we have more to cover. The last point I want everyone to consider for this year has to do with website tracking technology. So I'm sure some of you have seen these headlines the last couple months, but I wanted to take a moment to just talk about it, because ultimately what we're seeing is a new trend towards how we're tracking data and sending it to third parties. This bleeds into some of the future of technology conversation later on, but ultimately what these headlines have captured and why investigations have been started is because hospitals or medical groups have been using pixels. So it's tracking consumer data, how we interact with websites, and the hospitals are voluntarily sending data to from the users of their websites to Meta, which is the parent group of Facebook or Google or others that are involved in targeted advertising. So why this is an issue is because depending on what website it belongs to and what the pixel has access to, it could very well be sending patient health information to these third parties. And why it's becoming an investigation and why there's lawsuits around it is because most of the time there are not business associate agreements in place with those third parties, because they aren't traditionally understood as a business associate, right? So by putting a BAA in place, it designates that third party as a business associate and poses the same security measures that a traditional business associate would need to have in place in order to share that information. So we're seeing federal guidance essentially around this, saying if you're going to have tracking technology, you need at a minimum having a business associate agreement in place, as well as clearly defining what the breach notification responsibilities are, right? Because this isn't something that these third parties that have to do with retail and targeted advertising and selling merchandise have to do with traditionally. So there's a lot that goes into this and can get really granular really quick, but ultimately the point I want you to take away from this and consider is anytime you have any sort of social campaign running or even having a conversation now with your EHR of, do they have any of those partnerships in place that would potentially be pulling information without consent from the patient and bringing it to third parties. So start to have those conversations around it. And the third parties you work with should have answers. And if they don't, it could very well be a red flag to shut the tracking down. Moving into regulatory updates. There are a few things that I really want to touch on, but and it might apply to some and it won't apply to others, but ultimately the public health emergency that began in 2020 due to the COVID pandemic has been renewed every 90 days for the last couple years. But we have just heard from the US Department of Health and Human Services that they will not be renewing past May 11th, 2023. Why this is important is because we've seen some enforcement discretion in terms of how HIPAA compliance requirements pertain to telehealth and audio options, right? We had to shift quickly to different alternatives to see patients in the last couple of years. And some of those processes and workflows have remained in place because we're seeing in our business model, it makes sense for some of our employees. And then we even look at rural populations and it has expanded the accessibility of healthcare. So this is not something that we want to get rid of. However, how it pertains to HIPAA compliance is the fact that you will now be held to HIPAA compliance standards to your telehealth technologies. So under the public health emergency, if you are using FaceTime or Zoom or some less secure version of a HIPAA compliant telehealth platform, right, you wouldn't necessarily have to pay any penalty, have to report on it to the Office of Civil Rights if there was a breach. Come May 11th, 2023, you will be held to HIPAA compliance requirements for those platforms. So I share that because some groups still haven't transitioned. I would say it's a minority, but I wanted to make it known because that will be ending in a few months. And under the telehealth aspect of this, this is a little outside of HIPAA, but I like to share it and I included the link. So if you want to read up on it, that would be good. But there are some permanent changes to Medicare billing for telehealth options. And it really has to do with all the behavioral and mental health services. So ultimately, you can continue to bill telehealth visits, I believe the same as in-person for those types of services, behavioral and mental health. However, the flexibility for billing on some of these non-behavioral mental health services are extended through December 2024, but those flexibilities and ability to bill the same price for in-person will be going away in a little under 2 years. So while you still have some time to transition out of it, it's just something to keep top of mind right now. Additionally, part two has more to do with the behavioral health world, but because so many of our hospitals, FQHCs, and standalone behavioral health clinics, right, are coming to the surface because there's such a mental health need, those clinicians are in dire need these days. We're seeing a better alignment between part two and HIPAA, or at least proposed rulemaking around it. So historically, the part two aspect of our Code of Federal Regulations has to do with additional privacy parameters for those with psychotherapy notes and any type of documentation on behavioral health, right? We want to make sure that those types of details are very much protected, but they're separate from HIPAA. So they have proposed legislation around better aligning that to decrease the administrative burden for anyone who deals with part two compliance. So that might pertain to some, might not for others. I have talked about the privacy rule changes coming for the past 2 years. And I laugh just because we still don't actually know when the final rule will come through. However, when I was researching, I did not see anything directly from HHS on this, but the majority of commentary out there is that it is expected by the HHS for these changes to roll out in 2023. The caveat to that is the enforcement period. You have a very long grace timeline to implement these changes, which when that rule is finalized, we will update you on what that means for you. So just know that these are probably coming this year, but very well could be delayed again. And then lastly, because we talk about enforcement from the Office of Civil Rights as a primary topic, given the fact that our world's HIPAA compliance, but the Office of Civil Rights, so they actually perform random desk audits as well as audits pertaining to any type of breach around patient information. And some groups don't necessarily know that. I would argue the majority do. But what's interesting in the 2021 report to Congress that was just released last week, I believe, it demonstrated that in 2021, no desk audits were performed because the Office of Civil Rights was so understaffed, which is really interesting to note because we educate a lot on being prepared for those desk audits. However, because of that reality, they requested a 50% increase in their budget so that they could hire additional staff. That was approved for 2023. So they have increased their staff by 90 full-time employees, which brings the number of auditors to 232 total. Why this is important is because their manpower has now dramatically increased so that they can now begin again those random desk audits, because the number of cybersecurity issues and breaches investigations they're having to deal with continues to increase. So that workload is a priority, but now they have the staff to have a process and structure around making sure we are checking for compliance beyond those who have been breached. So keep that in mind. And now we're going to move into the future of technology and HIPAA. So there are a lot of different things you could talk about when we talk about the future of technology, but the few things I want to focus on really have more to do with what our potential HIPAA compliance issues look like. So the first is artificial intelligence. So while this is a really exciting conversation, especially for healthcare right now, and seeing how it's going to elevate our ability to provide care, we're seeing a lot of worry around it taking over the role of doctors. But the amount of research that I'm seeing is that we're now defining it as augmented intelligence, because we want to use this to enhance the intelligence of clinicians, right? Just to enhance the work that we're doing to provide even better patient care. Because if there's all of this data that we're sitting on in our EHRs and beyond, right? If we can derive trends and genetic determinants from a large group of people, then we can ultimately identify early indicators of sicknesses. Anyways, I get really passionate and excited about it because of the ability for us to do so much more with artificial intelligence. However, we're starting to already see issues with privacy concerns. So that falls under HIPAA. And what I mean by that is it has to do with how we're de-identifying the information to share with artificial intelligence groups or third parties that are helping augment what we're currently doing. So there are some things that we need to consider. And I'm pulling this mostly from a lawsuit that happened back in 2019. There was a HIPAA violation lawsuit around the University of Chicago and their selling of patient data to Google. So while they were trying to do this within the parameters of HIPAA by de-identifying it, ultimately what happened is in the doctor proctored notes in the EHR, those aspects of the information were not properly de-identified. So these are some of the risks that we need to consider, right? So if you're looking to partner with artificial intelligence groups or maybe a big player like Meta, Google, Bing, it's something to consider is really taking into account how your patient information could be exposed. In addition to that, even if we do our due diligence of de-identifying them, another major concern with artificial intelligence is that these tools and the software programs are so powerful that they have enough information building over time that they could re-identify those patients, even if the information is anonymous. So something to just consider, there aren't major takeaways from this right now. If you are contracted with a group like Google or an artificial intelligence vendor in some sort of facet, definitely worth a conversation. But for the most part, this is just something we're staying close to and watching over the next couple of years to see how it develops and how security and privacy measures continue to evolve with our technology. The last note on this that you can see is vendor due diligence. And it's important because of everything else that we've been talking about, right? Business associates, there are already risks there, but with these vendors that don't necessarily have the same HIPAA compliance requirements, it's still worth making sure that they have sufficient security measures in place and putting some of the financial burden on them too. If there is a breach and you do find yourself in a lawsuit, right? Obviously we don't want that to happen, but I share that as an option if you are in one of those positions. The second aspect of technology and HIPAA that I want to address is wearable devices, which is also an exciting trend that we're seeing in terms of how the patients can really own the ability to track trends in their own data. But then we also are seeing like how to keep some of these emergency room visits down and augmenting what we're currently doing to continue to provide care for these patients, but keeping our overhead costs down and keeping emergency rooms open for those who truly are in emergencies, right? Like those with type 1 diabetes or those with heart risk. So we are seeing these wearable devices that are ultimately tracking this information. So the security and privacy aspect of this have more to do with the device and that third party. So we're seeing statements from the White House already about we need to start looking at all of our devices, the we're going to get even more technical, the Internet of Things, how everything connects within our hospitals, on our networks, but then beyond these devices that aren't within our networks, but capturing patient information. How's that information being shared? Is it in a de-identified way, or is it to a third party that doesn't fall under HIPAA? And is the patient ultimately educated on that their information is not as protected if you were sharing it with the hospital? So while this is still a vague area for us to navigate right now and doesn't directly affect covered entities, it's just something to keep top of mind because we are seeing more patients start to use these third-party applications to capture individually identifying information. And it would be really great for us as a healthcare community to begin educating on the risk to that data. So while these third parties, there are now requirements around that education, right? Ultimately, it can be helpful for the healthcare voice and that authority to add to the conversation. Now we're moving into some of the practical steps. And the first thing that I like to cover on this is what would happen in an OCR investigation. If there's anyone on this call that has been through one of these, this is probably going to look familiar to you. Ultimately, they start by checking to see what your compliance looks like with HIPAA, because that typically highlights where gaps were missed and ultimately where the breach was able to come from. And then subsequently, we see the penalties defined around missing these compliance pieces. So as you can see on the screen, right, there's a variety of things they could request, but the why I highlighted the main parts is for you to really see how your security rule requirements under HIPAA are your security risk analysis, your policies and your procedures, your risk management plan, your training. It really is all-encompassing to what we're already required to do. So if there are pieces missing, right, and we don't have sufficient documentation, then we're going to find ourselves in the position of one of these groups. So these are groups that we've already looked at, the headlines that I shared earlier, but now I'm showing you ultimately what was not found in investigation after the breach, which informs why they were penalized. So Oklahoma State University, they failed to conduct an accurate and thorough risk analysis. So whether that was in the last year or the last couple years, they did not have a sufficient security risk analysis true to what's required under the HIPAA security rule. So that's really informing for us, right? Because it lets us know, okay, I need to make sure that that documentation aspect is in place in case I do have a breach like this too. And then Banner Hospital, similar situation. You can see that they lacked an analysis to determine risks and vulnerabilities to PHI. That is what defines a security risk analysis. So two larger groups that you would almost assume are doing everything right are missing foundational pieces of our HIPAA compliance requirements. So in terms of a place to start, making sure your security risk analysis is accurate and thorough is fantastic places to start, and it checks off compliance boxes for you. So what does that even mean, an accurate and thorough security risk analysis? Well, one, accurate means it needs to be true to what's actually happening, not, well, we're going to change this eventually, so I'm going to mark it down as if we already have. An accurate security risk analysis is true to that point in time what your risk actually is. If you come out the other end with bright red areas of risk, a ton of high priority items, it's okay. It doesn't mean you failed a security risk analysis. it means you have high priority items to begin working on immediately. Failure is when you don't do anything about those risks. And so while this concept seems relatively basic, I do a lot of re-education on, after you complete your security risk analysis, your work isn't done. You have to now create a plan to address those risk items and do so in a risk priority way, right? So making sure the highest priority items are being addressed first. Beyond that, though, what we know about HIPAA, right, is that you need to conduct this annually or after significant changes. So the security rule actually doesn't necessarily say you need to do this annually. It explicitly says the Office of Civil Rights, it explicitly states that you need to do this regularly. And what that means is it's down to your subjective opinion, which isn't super helpful, but we've seen enough industry experts ultimately say that if you aren't doing this annually, it's time to begin doing that at a minimum. So something to consider if you aren't doing this annually, it's a really good activity to ensure you're doing every single year. The rule also doesn't say if it's third party or self-assessed. It, one way or the other is totally fine. Just making sure that you are accurately and thoroughly looking at your risk. So sometimes that third party opinion is really helpful. We act as that for some of our clients, right? Just to be an objective party coming in saying, hey, this could be better based on what we're seeing in the field and where the risks really are right now. So that can always be really helpful, but doesn't mean you can't do it on your own as well. It just needs to be happening. And then also looking at your policies, right? We touched on this earlier with making sure we're elevating our processes internally, auditing what we're currently doing. Your security risk analysis should naturally cover your security and privacy policies, looking at all of them, making sure that they do match what's happening in the environment. So make sure whoever's conducting this, that they are asking for updated policies every year when they complete this audit, or making sure that you yourself or a team are ensuring your policies are up to date with regulatory changes, as well as just your physical environment and the processes that your employees are following. And the true purpose is to identify gaps. So back to, if you have a fully read report, don't think that you did your SRA wrong, right? The whole point is to highlight those areas. And then lastly, right, the second part of this requirement is to get a plan in place. So make sure that you have an action item attached to every risk identified and a plan. It can be the following year if it's restricted by your budget, just documenting that this will be addressed in 2024 when you do get the budget approved. That kind of documentation goes a really long way. And then depending on the nature of your team, assign out some of these areas to your IT vendor, to your IT department, your operations, facilities, right? This doesn't all just fall on one person. And then it increases overall awareness in your organization for more people that are involved. And then evidence is really helpful, right? Your policies act as evidence and the documentation to supplement does too, but make sure you just have the proof that you're doing what you say you're doing. And for those who participate in MIPS, this standard does explicitly say this needs to be done annually. So keep that in mind. And then I pointed at the risk management side because I definitely talk to a few groups that participate in MIPS and are doing their security risk analysis, but what they don't necessarily realize is that the MIPS measure explicitly says and expects your risk management process to be implemented after the fact. So your risk management plan is a critical piece if you participate in MIPS, as well as if you don't. Learning from another headline, this has more to do with policies. There was a recent dental practice that ultimately responded to a social media review inappropriately and disclosed patient information. And so what I really want to capture from this is, because that's what happened, right? We inappropriately responded on Yelp to a review or a social media post. The corrective action plan from the Office of Civil Rights ultimately saying, this is what you need to go fix, had everything to do with policies and training your employees on policies. So this gives a lot of insight into when mistakes are made, a lot of it comes back to the framework for our organization. What does your policy say is allowed to be stated in a social media response? Is it a helpful process for your employees to be trained on? Do you have it documented that you've trained your employees on it, right? These types of elements ultimately inform how we're going to be investigated against. So the point of this is to show that it's pointing back to the fact that we need sufficient security and privacy policies in place, because that is what will defend us, as well as that supplemental documentation. Why I share this slide and the next two is to give you a high-level snapshot of how we separate out and organize our policies in MedCurity's platform. So we have an entire content library for you to build out any policies that you might be missing, rebuild from the ground up. I have a lot of clients who do that, or really just to augment what you're currently doing. And by showing these slides, you can see at a high level what you might be missing. So while there are a lot of standards underneath each of these titles that we're addressing, it ultimately informs at a high level, if you're missing something, it's time to consider revamping them, especially our privacy policies. Not a lot of groups think of policies to support our notice of privacy practices, but what we've seen with our clients is that having supplemental workflows for our employees to look on, to train on, really can help mitigate these issues that are happening, right? You can see a social media policy right there that would have mitigated the dental practices issue. Having a sufficient policy in place, maybe the employee wouldn't have responded if they had been trained on it and it was documented appropriately. And so you can see, right, use and disclosure, how we're accessing, letting patients access their information, telehealth, remote work, all things that have changed in the last couple of years and are getting more attention from the Office of Civil Rights, right? Having those workflows for your employees can be really helpful. So pertaining to policies, what can you focus on right now? Make sure that they completely cover all the standards under HIPAA. I have seen a few policy sets that are missing key aspects, or they haven't pushed their policies from development to being approved, and they're just in this limbo state. This is your reminder that your policies really will act as a defensive measure if you find yourself in one of these situations, but also it's really helpful to train your employees on, depending on what it is. So make sure that they cover all the standards, but make sure they're actually all approved and that they're in place and that they're being reviewed. We encourage every year, but depending on what makes sense for your organization, it could be every other year. And the ability to train your staff on these policies is dependent on them being able to access them. So that one's pretty straightforward. And from an internally defensive position, it could also be really helpful to have your employees sign off that they have reviewed your policies each year, because if you make any changes, update existing policies, making sure that your employees are aware of those changes is really helpful, especially a policy like your sanctions policy. So what are the consequences if an employee inappropriately views a patient chart that's not within their scope of work? Have they been educated on it? Do they understand that if they do it three times, they could be fired, right? Having them sign off on that fact is everything if you do find yourself in that position. And lastly, right, try not to absorb this all on one plate. If you can develop a team to do this, one, you can set a recurring calendar invite or a meeting that happens every quarter where you come together and review certain policies, make progress on some of these action items, right? This is a really practical way to keep a team accountable, but also not put all of this on one person. And then lastly, with business associate agreements, right? I've definitely touched on a lot of these pieces already, but to review, what we've seen to be really helpful with our clients is having a master list of all of your business associates, as well as a quick note of what systems they have access to right next to them. Because from a quick onboarding and offboarding position, you now have one place where you can see all your access points for third parties, and you can quickly shut them down if they no longer work with you, if there's a breach for some reason. This is a really simple thing to put in place in terms of managing third-party risk. You are required to review all your business associate agreements, even if they're evergreen, right? Most BAAs are, but make sure that you have a designated cadence to do that. And that often can help. And then system access, right? That goes back to how we are documenting what access business associates have so that we can quickly turn that off right when the access needs to be shut off. And then when you do review your business associate agreements, right, needs to document what their system access is, but also make sure that they know or it's changed when that access increases or decreases, because we want that agreement to be true to what's happening in that moment. And then make sure they're complying with HIPAA, as simple as that. And then breach notification reporting that also comes back to your business associate agreement that needs to be defined in your terms. I like to take a second to talk specifically about system audits, because this is oftentimes one thing that can be forgotten about. Naturally, in the amazing list of things that we need to do every week, month, year, right? It just continues to build. But the purpose of system audits really does a few things that not only complies with your federal obligations, but can really protect you from, like, that last bullet is if you can just naturally check in to see if there's an account that's overactive. Maybe it is a breached account, and then your monthly audit would shut that down way sooner than your annual audit would. But ultimately, your policy needs to define when you are doing those information system activity reviews. So make sure that that's true to what you actually can do reasonably, whether that's every quarter or every month, make sure that's accurate in your policy. Internally, chart auditing is a very important piece of this also. I have a couple different recommendations depending on your size of organization on how to do this. So if you have questions on this one, feel free to reach out separately on it. But for the majority of groups, I recommend sample sizing and just spot checking a few employees or a certain number of records so that you can make sure that you're doing your due diligence. If you do have the budget to get one of the monitoring softwares, we have a couple of recommendations on what those could look like too, because those are obviously really helpful. And network access, always making sure that we are checking that because of third-party risk. Like we've looked at all of the statistics earlier, is the majority of our risk is coming from the outside. So if our networks and our firewalls are not being reviewed regularly, then we might be missing critical risks. And then at the bottom, documentation is everything. I don't think I can emphasize this piece enough. You just need the proof. Say what you're doing is true. And then lastly, let's train our employees. This has been littered throughout, and I won't spend a ton of time on this, but according to HIPAA, you are required to train them on HIPAA compliance upon hire and annually. So that's the baseline of what you're required to do. But then you're also required to do ongoing security awareness and training that is defined. So what that can look like could be a tool that regularly sends out alerts. This could be considered doing phishing simulations, right? We just talked about how critical that is. But it also could be as simple for some of the smaller groups out there of subscribing to a newsletter that ultimately sends you updates of what's happening in the news, the highest security concerns, and you can parse that out to your employees, or you can just forward the newsletter altogether, and that would be considered your ongoing training. So a couple different ways to look at that. And then lastly, just a quick plug on MedCurity, and I'll try to address some of these questions that have been coming in. Ultimately, we educate on this because that's why we've developed our software. We recognize that the foundational aspects of HIPAA have everything to do with defending and promoting the security best practices of what for healthcare right now. So we have a security risk analysis platform that manages the entire assessment that also transitions immediately into a risk management plan. So a lot of these elements that I've just talked through, our software directly supports it and backstopped by our entire support team. We have a great team that will answer any question and make sure that you're confident in it. And then I mentioned our policy builder also. We have an entire template library. So whatever policy you might need, we've got canned language for you to start. We have a simple way for you to manage business associate agreements. And we have risk analytics pulling all your data to the top saying, hey, This is a great way to report on, visualize where your risk lies. And then we have HIPAA training. So pretty straightforward, but thank you so much for taking the time. I know we're a little bit over now, but we'll send out the recording, the slide deck. And like I said, you'll have my contact information. So please follow up with additional questions and we're happy to be a resource. Thanks so much for taking the time today. We will be in touch soon.